Shabbos Daf Kuf Chaf Dalid. We are in the 17th parak of Maseches Shabbos, and we are dealing with the topic of Muksa. Since the beginning of this parak, we introduced ourselves to the following. In order to establish whether something is Muksa on Shabbos and therefore cannot be moved on Shabbos, so the following needs to be ascertained. One is to determine what category this item belongs. If it is something where the owner of the item uses it for nothing other than its intended purpose, so that is what falls under the category of muksa machmas chisaron kis. If the item is generally used for something which is prohibited on Shabbos, that's a klisha malachto le'isser. If something is used typically for something which is permissible on Shabbos, that is called what a klisha malachto leheter. After determining what category the item belongs, so then the question becomes, why am I moving that item? Is it the sorach mekomo? Is it because I need the place right now in which that item is situated? Is it mitzorach gufo? Is it because I need the actual item itself? Or is it micham lesel? Or am I moving the item because I'm moving it from the sun to the shade in order to protect the item? So based on those two basic variables, so we will determine whether the item is muksa or not. And within these categories and within the purpose of moving them, there's a machlokus between Abai and Rava under what circumstances one is allowed to move, and we're going to go over the machlokus Abai and Rava in just a moment. On top of all of that, we learned yesterday that there is a history behind the Gzera of Muksa. When the Jewish people came back to Eretz Yisrael to rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash, so the population of people that went together with Ezra and Nehemiah back to Eretz Yisrael were not the most observant of Jews, and there were some basic issues that need to be dealt with. The one which our Gemara did not discuss yesterday is the amount of intermarriage that took place, and two, which the Gemara did deal with yesterday, is the amount of Chilul Shabbos that took place. In order to try to correct for the Chilul Shabbos that took place, so Nehemiah made a wide-sweeping gzera that all items cannot be moved on Shabbos. As I mentioned yesterday, this is very similar to the Rambam in terms of correction of midos. When a person has a particular midah that he wants adjusted or corrected, so what he's going to do is go all the way to the other side in order to balance out in the middle. Similarly, that's what Nehemiah did in terms of making the gzera of muksa, where he made all items muksa, with notable exception to three items. We went over them yesterday. And then, slowly but surely, he then adjusted and moved it back somewhere to the center. And in the course of discussion yesterday, we learned that Nehemiah made the gzera of muksa widespread. And then, in various stages, there were certain allowances that were made regarding muksa. An allowance followed by a second allowance, followed by a third allowance, then finally arriving at the fourth stage. The fourth stage is where the Mishnah landed yesterday. The Mishnah, on the Amud Beis of yesterday's daf, quoted to Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi Omer, kol ha-kelim nitalim, that all kelim can be moved on Shabbos with notable exceptions of Masar Gadol, the large saw, and Yaseisha Machareisha, and the plowshare. And the reason why is because those items fall under the category of muksa machmas chisaron kis, but all other items can be moved. So, that is a general layout of yesterday's daf. Within yesterday's daf, let's just quickly go over the machlokes between Abai and Rava. Very fundamental debate between them in terms of what were the allowances that were proposed since the gzera of Nehemiah. According to Abaye, eventually where we ended up with is that if it is a kli, shemalachta leheter, an item on Shabbos which generally is used for something which is permissible, so one is allowed to move it, sarach gufo, sarach mekomo. One can move it for its own purposes or if I need the place. If it is something which is a klisha machto le'isser, so I can move it, sarach gufo, I can move it for its purposes, meaning I need it, but I cannot move it, sarach mekomo. That is the conclusion of Abaye. Rava, on the other hand, disagrees. Rava says that the allowances that were given since the gzera was first instituted by the Navi Nehemiah is that when it comes to a klisha malachto leheter, you can move it for gufo, for mekomo, and even micham lesel. I can move it for both when I need the item, or I need the place that the item is occupying, or I'm moving it from the sun to the shade. In other words, just simply to protect the item. When is the klisha malachto leheter? So one is allowed to move it tzarach gufo, tzarach mekomo. But you cannot move it mechamel itself. You cannot move it from the sun to the shade. So where we end up with from yesterday's daf is a very basic machlokes between Abai and Rava in terms of how far-reaching are the heterim when it comes to a kli shemalachto le'isser. And basically, to distill it comes out now that kli shemalachto le'isser, according to Abaye, I can only move it Tzarech Gufo, but I cannot move it Tzarech Mekomo. According to Rava, I can move it both Tzarech Gufo and Tzarech Mekomo. The only limitation, according to Rava, is that I cannot move it Mechama L'Tzel. On top of all that, we also learned in yesterday's daf that both according to the Amoraim of Rabbi Hanin and Rabbi Lazar, you will find a certain number of Mishnayos throughout Shas that give no room of allowances of moving various items. And the proposal, Rabbi Hanin and Rabbi Lazar, is that these Mishnayos are old Mishnayos going all the way back to the original presentation of the Gzeir of Muksa. Meaning these Mishnayos take us all the way back to when Nehemiah first instituted Muksa, where it was wide sweeping and it was all encompassing. And these Mishnayos that we cited yesterday go all the way back to that period of time. In other words, we could say, and as I mentioned yesterday, you cannot say this out of context. You can only say this in context of our discussion. These are outdated Mishnayos, meaning these are Mishnayos that are reflecting a Gzeirah at a much earlier period of time. The Mishnayos are, we're going to go over them quickly because anyway we have to know them for today's daf. The Mishnayos are first Mishnayos of Kanim, the poles that were taken out and reinserted with the Lechem Apanim, as the Lechem Apanim were stacked one on top of the other. So you had these rods that were inserted between them in order to allow air to circulate between the loaves. And the Mishnah tells us that these poles cannot be put in on Shabbos, meaning you will stack the Lechem Apanim on Shabbos, but you will only insert the poles after Shabbos, for as these poles are deemed muksa and cannot be moved. The second Mishnah is a Maklos, when Erev Pesach falls out on a Shabbos and the animal needs to be flayed. Generally, sticks would be used and the animals would hang from the sticks, but the Mishnah says that when Erev Pesach falls out on a Shabbos, so we do not use the sticks, rather, in order to flay the animal, I just simply put my hand on your shoulder, you put your hand on my shoulder, the animals are going to be swinging from our arms, and you'll flay in that manner, but you cannot use the sticks. The third Mishnah is regarding the bolts of the door. Bolts of the door which cannot be moved from one door to another door, but rather can only be dragged, tilted manatzah, but cannot be moved directly. And finally, the fourth Mishnah is the Maducha. That's the pestle that cannot be moved unless there's garlic attached to the actual pestle itself. And so according to the Amoraim of Rabbi Hanin and Rabbi Lazar, these Mishnayos go back to the time where Nehemiah originally instituted the Gzeirah of Muksa, where it was an all-encompassing Gzeirah. However, since the allowances were given, the heterim were given for Muksa, so these Mishnayos no longer are reflecting the quote-unquote modern-day halacha. Modern-day, I mean, at the time when the Mishnah was actually edited. Those were the positions of Rabbi Hanina, and in terms of the four Mishnayos, Rabbi Lazar. Truth be told, Rabbi Hanina only applied this to one of the Mishnayos, Rabbi Lazar applied it to all four Mishnayos. And that is where we got up to into today's daf, and now we continue today where we left off yesterday with the words Amar Rabba. It's about 6-7 lines from the top of the Amud, on Kuf Chavdal Amud Aleph, and we're continuing Amar Rabba Mimai. Rava says you don't have to say this. This idea that these Mishnayos are reflecting the original presentation of Muksa, the original Gzeirah of Muksa of Nehemiah, is an unnecessary chiddush, as you have to say in all these Mishnayos. In fact, as Rava is about to argue, you could say that within all these Mishnayos, it really is reflecting the updated Gzeirahs of Muksa, and for reasons that we're going to explain for each one of them, in these particular cases, we're going to be, quote-unquote, a little extra machmir. So that these Mishnayos were authored, edited after Hataras Kelim, after all the Heterim came with Muksa. And now we're going to go through each Mishnah and explain why we're going to be particularly machmer in these particular Mishnayos. Kanim time amay mishum I afushe b'hai porta lo me'apesh. Look, the reason why we're putting in the rods, separating the lechem upon him a little bit one from the other in order to create circulation is because we do not want the bread to become stale. Look, we're going to be loading them up on the lechem, on the shulchan, on Shabbos. There's only going to be several hours taking us from the time that they're put onto the shulchan until Motzei Shabbos. And so, in that short amount of time, the bread is not going to get moldy. And then on Motzei Shabbos, we're going to insert the rods. And so, therefore, for that little time, we don't need to worry that the bread is going to become stale. Rashi notes that, in general, the fact that the bread is going to be on the table for a full week, so, and the idea that by next week the bread is still going to be tasting fresh, so Rashi notes that's a miracle, that's a nes. And at the same time, however, Rashi writes that we're not somich on nes, we don't rely on a miracle, and therefore we're going to make sure that air circulates between the breads, so at least we can minimize the amount of nes that we're relying on. And still, with a little amount of time on Shabbos, there's no need to put the rods in right away. And as long as it can be deferred to Motzei Shabbos, so we're going to defer to Motzei Shabbos. The second Mishnah, Maklos, Efshe, Karev, Elazar. Now, the idea that we're not going to be using the sticks when Erev Pesach falls out on the Shabbos in order to flay the Karben Pesach, the reason why we're not going to do that is because we don't need to do that. We could just simply use our arms in order to stabilize the Karben Pesach, so the animal could be flayed off of our arms, and as long as there's another way to do it and not having to use the sticks, so then there's no need to use the sticks. Number three, Glustera, Kid Rabbi Yana, Dam Rabbi Yana, Bechaser, Shenem, Rav, Saskinan. Now, as far as understanding, dragging the bolt from one door to another door, so the issue over there, and the reason why we're particularly machmir in such a situation, is not so much a muksa issue, as it is rather a chaser shenu merevis. We're talking about where it is situated in the doorway, and a doorway that opens up into a chaser, and the air of chaseros has not been set up. Now, as we know, an air of chaseros is not set up, so that means to say that you cannot be carrying from the house into the chaser. Now, with a chaser or enu merevis, it's still a rishus yachid. Any kalim that started off in that chaser at the beginning of Shabbos can be moved within the chaser, but what you can't do is you can't transfer from the house to the chaser. Now, Rabbi Yeshua Savar Tocha Pesach Kelefnim Dami, V'kemetalta Mana Debatim B'chaser. Now, the way Rabbi Yeshua sees it is that because this bolt was in the doorway, the status of the interior of the doorway is going to have the same status as the house itself. Moving the bolt from the interior of the doorway into the chaser would be tantamount to moving something from the house into the chaser, which you can't do because this particular chaser did not have an eruv. Rabbi Tarfon Savar Tocha Pesach Kilechutz Dami. On the other hand, Rabbi Tarfon's of the opinion that the interior of the Pesach has the status as the chaser itself. And so therefore, Mana de Chatzer Bechatzer Kamataltal. All you're doing now is just moving the bolt within the chaser. And again, even though the chaser does not have an eruv, but that does not prevent me from being able to carry items that started off on Shabbos in the chatzer, and because the interior of the doorway is deemed as part of the chatzer, so therefore all you're doing is just simply moving an item within the chatzer. So that could be the machlokus between Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Elazar, and having nothing to do with muksa. And finally, Maducha, Rabbi Nechemihi. And as far as the Mishnah of Maducha is concerned, well, we already made this point yesterday, but now we're just simply reiterating, and that is the Mishnah regarding the Maducha, the fact that you cannot move the pesel on Shabbos, is because the Mishnah over there is espousing the viewpoint of Rabbi Nechemiah, which we're about to see in our upcoming Mishnah, is of the opinion that you can only move an item for its design purpose, and you cannot move it for anything else. And because this pestle is designed and meant to be used for grinding, therefore the pestle cannot be moved at all on Shabbos. So is the position of Rabbi Nechemiah, and it could very well be that Bryce is just simply espousing the viewpoint of Rabbi Nechemiah. When all said and done, we now have a machlokus amongst the Amoraim, whether these Mishnayos, which are particularly machmir as it relates to the issue of Muksa, are these Mishnayos reflecting the Gezerah of Muksa as it was originally presented at the time of the Navi Nechemiah, or these Mishnayos are actually reflecting the Gezerah of Muksa as it presently is constructed. And it's just a question of, if that's in fact the case, how do you understand these Mishnayos? And Rabbah just went through every one of these Mishnayos to explain that for various reasons, these Mishnayos are going to be slightly more machmer than your standard Muksa Halacha. Continuing now in Kuf Chavdal Amad Alf with the Mishnah called Kelim Nitalmud Tzarech Vishalol Tzarech. Kelim can be moved both for need and not for need. Now that statement in of itself is not clear. And as we go through the Gemara, we're obviously going to try to clarify that statement to the Mishnah. Rav Nechemiah Omer Ein Nitalon El Tzarech. Rav Nechemiah says that you can only move these kelim only for their need. So obviously we have a lot of explaining to do in this Mishnah. This Mishnah is cryptic. And so as we start with the Gemara, we're obviously looking to explain what the intent of the Mishnah is. My Tzarech, my Shalol Tzarech. So the obvious question now is what is the Tzarech and what is Shalol Tzarech? So Amar Rava. So we're going to have amongst the Amoraim two Amoraim explaining the Mishnah, and it will be based on their positions. Now, in our Gemara, we have the words Amar Rava. If you look at the side of the Gemara, it says that the Rif and the Rush have the Girsa of Abaye, and you'll see that it actually works out a lot better if I just simply say Abaye, even though not rejecting the Girsa of our Gemara, it just happens to be that Abaye is a Girsa which works consistent with what we saw in yesterday's Daf. Now, just as a quick refresher, we learned yesterday that according to Abaye, a klisha malachto leheter can be moved both letzarach gufo and tzarach mekamo. A klisha malachto leiser, according to Abaye, can only be moved l'tzarech gufo, but cannot be moved l'tzarech mekoma. So, in that thought, so now let's go through what is meant in our Mishnah. L'tzarech davar shemalachta l'heter. L'tzarech gufo. So when we say l'tzarech, we're talking about something which is generally used for heter, and that meant that you could move it l'gufo. I can move it because I need the item itself. Shalal l'tzarech davar shemalachta l'heter l'tzarech mekoma. And when the Mishnah says shalal l'tzarech, that's talking again about a kli shemalachta l'heter. And it means I'm moving tzarech makoma, meaning I need the space. V'davar shemalachta l'iser. Now, on the other hand, however, if it's a kli shemalachta l'iser, l'tzarech gufo and l'tzarech makoma lo. So I can only move it because I need the item itself, but I cannot move it if I only need the space. This is all the shita of Abaye as we learned yesterday, and this is how Abaye understands our Mishnah, that our Mishnah using the words l'tzarech and shalal l'tzarech is only limited to a kli shemalachta l'heter. V'asar em nechemi l'meimar. Now, on that, so we're going to continue expanding our Mishnah according to Abaye, or according to our Girsa, according to Rabbah. Ve'afilo davar shemalachta l'heter l'tzarech gufo and l'tzarech mekoma lo. That according to Reb Nechemia, if it's a kli shemalachta l'heter, I can only move it l'gufo, but I cannot move it l'tzarech mekoma. This is Abaye's understanding of our Mishnah. Amar le'Rava, to which Rava says l'tzarech mekoma. Shelo l'tzarech karisle. That's a very difficult pshat in our Mishnah, because our Mishnah uses the words shelo l'tzarech, and you want to say that Shalal Tzarech is modifying Tzarech Mekomo, meaning Tzarech Mekomo means there's a need. And you want to tell me that that's Pshat in the Mishnah when the Mishnah uses the word Shalal Tzarech? That's very difficult. Elam Rava, so now Rava is going to explain the Mishnah, and this is going to be Rava consistent to the way he explained it in yesterday's daf. This was his shita about the categories of Kli Shemachta Leheter and Kli Shemachta Leiser. Litzarech Davar Shemachta Leheter, Ben Litzarech Gufo, Ben Litzarech Mekomo. And when the Mishnah here says the words l'tzarech, it's talking about a kli shemalachta l'heter, which means that you're allowed to move it both the gufo and mekomo. And shelo l'tzarech v'afilu mecham l'tzel. And shelo l'tzarech means that we're still talking about a kli shemalachta l'heter. And what does it mean that I can move it even shelo l'tzarech? Meaning I don't have a need for the item, but I'm just simply moving it because it's out in the sun and I want to take it out of the sun, move it into the shade. So that is the understanding of our Mishnah according to Rava. So the tzarech is either tzarech mekam or tzarech gufo. Shalal tzarech is mecham l'tzel. And the topic is a kli shemalachta l'heter. V'davar shemalachta l'iser. Now, if we are in fact going to move down the level and talk now about the category of a kli shemalachta l'iser, tzarech gufo, tzarech mekam in mecham l'tzel lo. So this is now runs in distinction in that when a kli shemalachta l'iser, I can only move for tzarech gufo, tzarech mekama, but I cannot move it mecham l'tzel. V'asar Reb Nechemi l'meimar. Now, on that, Reb Nechemi comes to argue, and he says, V'afilu davar shemalachta l'heter. Even if it's a kli shemalachta l'heter, tzarech gufo, or tzarech mekama in, I can move an item, tzarech gufo, tzarech mekama, but in mecham l'tzel, but I cannot move an item, mecham l'tzel. So, we have now two basic approaches to how to understand a Mishnah. We have Abaye's approach, or the Girsa in our Gemara, we have Rabba's approach, or we have Rava's approach. And again, these two ways of understanding our Mishnah are going to be running consistent with the way Abaye and Rava were arguing in yesterday's daf. Yasav Rav Safar, Rav Acha Bar Huna, V'Rav Huna Bar Chinna V'Yasmi V'Kamir L'Rabba. So now the Gemara says, so now let's think this through. So that means that the way Rava explained our Mishnah, and again, when we say Rava, we could also say Abaye as well. The way Rava explained our Mishnah, Aliba the Reb Nechemia. So now let's take the following under consideration. Because Reb Nechemia's position within Rabba's explanation is very machmir. You have a kli shemalachta l'iser, and Reb Nechemia says that I can only move l'tzarech gufo, but I cannot move l'tzarech mekoma. So now, let's consider the following. Hanakaros, hechem etatalinan. You had your meal, you finished your meal. So all the plates, forks, knives, spoons that are on the table. So what category do they fall under? They fall under the category of a kli shemalachta l'heter. And the way Rabba understands the Mishnah, according to Rabbi Nechemia, I can only move those plates, forks, knives, l'tzarech gufo. Meaning, if I want to have my meal, so I can move them. But we finished our meal. And now what do I want? I want the table. I just simply want room on the table. But according to Rabbi Nechemia, I'm not allowed to move them. Because Rabbi Nechemia says that a kli shemalachta l'heter, I cannot move l'tzarech mekomo. And so therefore, what allowances would there be, if any, to take all of the used utensils on the table and send them back to the kitchen? So Amalu Rav Safra needed to have a graf shalri. So the Gemara tries to explain and suggest, well, maybe the heter over here is based on the heter graf shalri. We know that when you have something foul smelling in the house, so that and it's a muksa item, the Chachamim gave an allowance for you to take it out of the house. So over here, when you have the used plates and the used forks and knives on the table, so maybe the heter of Graf Shalri will allow you to bring it back into the kitchen. So Amalei Abai LaRav LaMar Aliba the Reb Nechemya. And over here now, we're going to basically have the same back and forth, just the Amoraim over here are going to be Abai and Rabba. So Abai says to Rabba, according to the master, meaning according to you, Rabba, Aliba the Reb Nechemya. The question comes out to be the same. So you're understanding within the Shita Reb Nechemya, how are you taking the plates, forks, and knives and bringing them back to the kitchen? So Amalei Rav Safra Chavrin Tegrama Midedahav Graf Shalri. And so Rava's response is, we're going to be using the Heter of Graf Shalri. Eisvei Abai LaRava. The Gemara now is going to have a direct challenge from Abai to Rava. And that is the Mishnah, and we've seen this Mishnah already numerous times, and we get to see it again. Meducha, if we're talking about the pestle, which is a kli shel machto le'iser, im yesh b'shul metaltan osa v'im lav ein metaltan osa. I can only move the pestle on Shabbos only if there is actual garlic inside the pestle, and so the garlic is allowing me to move it. But if there's no garlic, I can't move the pestle. And let's just articulate the question before we get to the answer. And according to you, we're talking about a kli shel machto le'iser. So you say that you can move a klisha machalisa, you can move it tzarech gufo, and you can move it tzarech makomo. Why is the Mishnah telling me that I cannot move it? So hacha b'mayiskin and mechamal itself. So a way of understanding is that, well, maybe the movement over here that's going to be forbidden is moving it from the sun to the shade. And maybe for that reason, one would not be allowed to move it. Eisvei, the Gemara challenges once again v'shavin. Shim kitzav alav basar sh'asal ataltalo. We go now to the case of the Eli, which we saw also in yesterday's daf, and we get to review again. And that is basically this large cutting board, but it's more than just a cutting board. It's a board that's used for grinding as well. They pounded on this board. And once again, it's a klisha malakto le'isr. And on Yontov, says the Mishnah in Beitza, after you cut the meat on it, you're allowed to cut meat on it on Yontov because of Simchas Yontov. But after you cut the meat on it, you cannot move it. Now it's a klisha machto le'iser, why can't you move it? Achanami mechama le'sel. And again, the same answer is proposed over here. The movement that's going to be forbidden is moving it from the sun to the shade. That's a way of understanding the Mishnah. The Hadidnan, the Gemara says, well, why don't we consider it in the next Mishnah? Another Mishnah in Beitza. Ein somchin es hakedera, bibikas v'chein bedelos. One cannot take a pot and lean it against pieces of wood. Same thing is true with the door as well. You can't lean pieces of wood against it. Now the Gemara says the wood on Yontiv, v'ha bikas to be yomtov davish shemlachto leheterhu. Now a piece of wood on Yontiv is heter. On Yontiv you're allowed to burn wood. You're allowed to make a fire. So the wood falls under the category of a kli shemlachto leheter. So an ama davish shemlachto leheter beilin tzarech gufo beilin tzarech mekama aser. And that Mishnah is teaching us that a klisha machto leheter, you cannot move it, not l'sarach gufa, not l'sarach mekomo. And the Gemara says, now it doesn't make any sense, meaning you should be able to move it. You should be able to move it for both l'sarach gufa and l'sarach mekomo. It is a klisha machto leheter. So how some my time of kivin to be Shabbos, davar shem machto leheter hu, zeri yontav atu Shabbos. So the Gemara says, well, you're right. The question is outstanding. However, consider that even though on yontav you would in theory be allowed to move it, but on Shabbos, you, of course, would not be allowed to move it. On Shabbos, obviously, you cannot burn fire on Shabbos. So therefore, this wood on Shabbos would be a davar ha'aser. And so therefore, on Shabbos, you can't move it. So now we're learning together that there's a gzera that if you're not allowed to move it on Shabbos, you're not allowed to move it on Yontiv as well. Once you get comfortable with the idea of moving it on Yontiv, so therefore, you're going to end up coming to move it on Shabbos as well. So there's a gzera of muksa that extends from Shabbos over into Yontov. The Gemara says, "V'chitem Shabbos gufit tishtari da hadav shemachto le'iser, tzarech gufo and tzarech mekomo shari." So the Gemara says, "But I don't understand." Meaning, okay, so let's go back to Shabbos. So on Shabbos, what is this wood? So presumably it's a kli shemachto le'iser. Okay, but we learned together that according to Rava, a kli shemachto le'iser, you're allowed to move with tzarech gufo, and you're also allowed to move with tzarech mekomo. So over here, if I need to hold open the door, if I need to lean the pot on something, so why not move these items? This is now considered as falls under the category of tzarech gufo, and certainly you'd be allowed to move it according to Rabbi tzarech mekomo as well. So I don't understand. You're telling me that I can't move it on Yontov because I can't move it on Shabbos, but on Shabbos you are allowed to move it. So the Gemara says, and the Gemara introduces us now to a tremendous chiddush. Hani milehecha deika toras kli alav. The Gemara says that this idea that a kli shemachto le'iser you're allowed to move, but that's only when it's a kli. It has to have the designation of being a utensil. We spent some time in yesterday's daf going over this idea that the definitions of a keli, are basically going to be modeled after what is the definition of a keli as it relates to Tumah Tahara. And remember yesterday's daf, we had that machlokes between Abai and Rava. Do the two definitions necessarily correlate? Do they not correlate? But the basic idea, however, is that what can be moved on Shabbos? Kelim can be moved on Shabbos. But Hecha de Leika Torah is Kli Alav Lo. But if it does not have the status of being a Kli, so then it cannot be moved on Shabbos. So things like rocks and twigs and pieces of wood that do not have a Shem Keli cannot be moved on Shabbos. So over here, the reason why we're going to be Machmer over these items and the reason why they cannot be moved on Shabbos is because they're not even a Kli Shemalachto L'Isser. They don't have the status of being a Kli. And that's why they can't be moved on Shabbos. And once we say they can't be moved on Shabbos, so then the Gzera extends over to Yontav as well, and you cannot move them on Yontav as well. The Gemara says, now wait 1 second. So you're saying that when we have something with a Muksa status on Shabbos, so we are not allowed to move them on Shabbos, therefore we're also not allowed to move them on Yontav as well, because the Gzera Chachamim extends the ideas of Muksa, the principles of Muksa, from Shabbos over to Yontav. The Gemara says, is that true? Migazrin of Hatanan. But on the other hand, we also have another Mishnah in Masechta Beitza, Mashilim Peres Derech Aruba B'Yom Tov. Avalo B'Shabbos. The Mishnah says the following. You let your fruit dry up on the top of the roof, and you figured it was going to be a sunny day, and they're going to dry on the top of the roof. Now, being that you are putting them up on the roof to dry, so therefore they fall into the category of Muksa, because you don't plan on moving them from there until they're fully dried. So these fruit, as for the time being, now have the status of Muksa. Now let's say, all of a sudden, clouds start gathering, and you see it's about to rain. And you want to save the fruit. The problem, of course, is that it's Muksa. So what do you do? So, on Yantav, here's what you're allowed to do, says the Mishnah. You're allowed on Yantav to go ahead and basically push them through the skylight in order so that they go into the house and they'll be protected within the house. You cannot do this on Shabbos. So clearly the Mishnah over here gives an allowance for Muksa to be done on Yantav, even though you're not allowed to do it on Shabbos. This goes against what we just said. We just got done saying that if something is Muksa on Shabbos, Gzera D'Rabban, and extends it over to Yantav as well. And here in this example in the Mishnah, it teaches us exactly the opposite. That on Yantav there are certain allowances of Muksa that you don't have by Shabbos. So Umi Logaz Rinan the Gvatanan, the Gemara says, wait 1 second. On the other hand, I'm going to show you that we do make a Gzera, because the Mishnah says, Ein Ben Yantav L'Shabbos Ela Ochel Nefesh Bavad. The only difference between Yantav and Shabbos is the malachas that one is allowed to do for cooking on Yantav. Outside of that, Yantav and Shabbos are going to be equivalent. Now the equivalency is informing us that if something is going to be Muksa on Shabbos, it's also going to be Muksa on Yantav as well. So over here, what we have is a Mishnah teaching us very clearly that whatever is true by Shabbos is going to be true by Yantav as well. And if something is Muksa on Shabbos, it's going to be Muksa on Yantav as well. Really, where we are right now is we're kind of stuck between two places. On one hand, the Mishnah tells us that you can move the fruit through the sky roof on Yantav, but you can't do it on Shabbos. So there is no equivalency of Shabbos and Yantav as it relates to Muksa. And then we just learned the Mishnah together, the Mishnah Megillah, that says that the only difference between Yantav and Shabbos is Ochel Nefesh Bavad. Outside of that, there is a perfect equivalency between Shabbos and Yantav. So that's telling us that there is an equivalency of Muksa on Shabbos and Yantav. So where we are right now is confused. I'm Rav Yosef Lokasha, Ha Rabbi Eliezer, Ha Rabbi Yoshua. So the Amoraim now are going to try to not so much explain the differences between these two Mishnahs, but just simply say it's a machlokas. The one Mishnah is expressing the viewpoint of one Tana, and the other Mishnah is expressing the viewpoint of another Tana. Now, the way Rav Yosef is proposing is that this is really riding on the machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua, a machlokas that we saw not so long ago, the Tanya. And we're learning now the machlokas of these Tanayim. Osav Espinosha Naflu Labor, you have on Yantav, both the mother and its offspring falling into the same pit on Yantav. Now, you could take one of them out and shecht one of them, but you can't do that with both. The prohibition, the Isser of Osav Espino, would prohibit me from shechting both of them on Yantav. But because it's Yantav, I'm certainly allowed to shecht one of them. So what do? Rabbi Eliezer Omer Malas Arishon Amenasa Shochto V'Shochto. So Rabbi Eliezer says, you take the first one out, in order to shecht it, you do in fact shecht it. V'ashkin Yosolo Parnasa B'Mekomo. Now the second animal that's stuck in the pit, so you can't take it out right now because at this point in time it's Muksa. You can't shaft it, and so therefore it's Muksa. And so what you're going to do is you're going to drop food into the pit in order to feed it so that it doesn't die. Rabbi Yeshua Amar Malas Arishon Amnasa Shochto Veina Shochto Umarim Umalas Asheni. So Rabbi Yeshua says that what you're allowed to do is take out the first animal, and you can declare, you can even say, I plan on shafting it,
And then after taking up the first one, you can basically, quote unquote, rethink your decision. You can go back into the pit with harama, with a little bit of subterfuge, you can take out the second animal, and rasa zeh shochet. And you can shech either one that you want. Obviously, you can't shech both. It's an issur d'oraisa to shech both on the same day. But now you have the ability to shech one of those two, and you also successfully got both of them out of the pit using this harama, using this legal loophole. And the Gemara now wants to suggest that this machlokes between Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Eliezer is really the discrepancy between these two Mishnayos. Rabbi Yehoshua, who allows for harama, so he is going to be on the side that we don't make a gzera. And Rabbi Eliezer, does not allow the harama, so he's going to be more on the side of the idea that we are going to make a gzera from Shabbos Yontif. Now, it's not so easy to see how these two machloks in parallel with one another, even at this stage of the Gemara, at the Havamin of the Gemara. It is admittedly a little bit challenging to see how these two positions parallel with one another. And anyway, the Gemara now is going to debunk. Mimai. The Gemara says, I don't think that the machloks, Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Eliezer, has anything to do in terms of the equivalency of Shabbos and Yontif. Dilma adkan lo kama Rabbi Eliezer hasam. It could very well be that Rabbi Eliezer's position that harama is going to be prohibited is because el de'eshla parnasa. Because look, the truth of the matter is you don't need to do harama. The only reason why we're doing harama over here is because I want to salvage both animals. You could still salvage both animals. Even if you take only one of the animals out, you can go ahead and you can feed the other animal as it's sitting in the pit. But if there was no way in order to be able to feed the animal that was in the pit, so maybe he would also allow for the removal of that second animal. And it could very well be that Rabbi Yehoshua over there is going to be makel because he believes that this kind of loophole is a totally legitimate and legal loophole. But if there is no legal loophole that one can maneuver, so then maybe in general he also would have been machmir as well. So the Gemara says so. We do have a discrepancy between the Mishnayos, whether or not Shabbos and Yontif are acting or working with equivalency, or whether they're not working with equivalency. That's true, but it is not reflective of the machlokes of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yehoshua. So Alam Rapapa, now is going to give a second attempt in trying to explain. So maybe the machlok is between these Mishnayos and Beitza, well actually the Mishnah and Beitza and the Mishnah Megillah, is actually reflective of another machlokus, notably the machlokus between Beishamai and Beisil. Ditnan, because we learned in the following Mishnah. Beishamai Omrim, as we now turn to the Amud Beis, Ein Motzin Esakatan Vesalulav, Vesa Sefer Torah Shusar Abim, Ubeisil Matirin. So here we have the Mishnah and Beitza, Dafyid Beis, which gives us a very basic premise of the principle of Mitoch. And that means to say, that according to Beis Shammai, yes, you're allowed to cook on Yontif, and yes, you're allowed to light a fire on Yontif, but the heter of Yontif is only for the purposes of Ochel Nefesh, and that's it. You cannot do anything on Yontif outside of Ochel Nefesh. You cannot do any of these other malachas and use them for any other purposes. On the other hand, Beis Hillel also have the opinion that mitoch shehuchu l'tzorech huchu nami shelo l'tzorech, that once these malachas were allowed on Yontif, now that I can light a fire in order to cook on Yontif, you can light a fire for other purposes as well on Yontif, provided, of course, that it's a davar hashav l'chol nefesh. Once you're allowed to shecht on Yontif for eating, you can shecht for other purposes as well, etc., etc. And once you're allowed to carry on Yontif, so now you're also allowed to carry for other purposes as well. So you can carry a katan, you can carry a lulav, you can carry a sefer Torah. According to Beis Hillel, he uses the principle of mitoch. So what do you see over here? That in terms of the expansiveness of what one can do on Yontif, so Beis Shammai is not expansive. Beis Shammai is extraordinarily limited. On the other hand, Beis Hillel is much more expansive. And what the Gemara now is suggesting is that machlokus of the Mishnah and the Megillah and the Mishnah and Beitza is reflective of these two positions. Meaning the Mishnah in Megillah that says Ein Bein, that the only difference between Shabbos and Yontif is Ochel Nefesh, and there is no other difference, that is reflective of the Shita of Beis Shammai. On the other hand, the Mishnah that says Mashilin, that one is allowed to send the fruit, the drying fruit, down from the roof, down into the house, on Yontif, but not on Shabbos, so that's going to be reflective of the position of Beis Hillel. This is what now the Gemara, this is what Rav Papa is proposing, is a way to understand the discrepancy between these two Mishnayos. So the Gemara says, at this point in time, I'm starting to hear it a little bit better, but we have to fine-tune it just a little bit more. Emer de Shamas Lahu le Beis Shammai Hotzah. Toltam Yishamas Lahu. So the Gemara says, look, Beis Shammai was certainly restrictive on Yantav as it relates to Hotzah, but we're not talking about Hotzah. We're talking about Muksa over here. So the Gemara says, okay, the Tiltu Gufe Lav Misham Hotzahi. So the Gemara, it comes up with a fascinating statement and a very revelatory statement. And that is that Muksa is really part and parcel of the Malach of Hotzah. What it certainly sounds like the Gemara is saying is that part of the reason why the Chachamim made a Gzera of Tilt of Muksa is because it may lead to Hotzah. Meaning the more items that were allowed on Shabbos and on Yom Tov to pick up and to move, so the more tempted we're going to be, the more at risk we're going to be to pick up those items and move them from one Rishus to another Rishus. So really, one of the reasons why Muksa was prohibited on Shabbos and Yom Tov was because of Hotzah. So the Gemara says, so the truth of the matter is that this explanation is a very legitimate explanation. Meaning, once we see that according to Beis Shammai, he is going to be extraordinarily restrictive in terms of Hotzah, it also is telling in terms of where we stand in terms of Muksa. Since Muksa is a function of Hotzah, so therefore, if we're restrictive regarding Hotzah, we're going to be restrictive regarding Muksa as well. That is the Shita of Beis Shammai. Masha Enkin, according to Beis Hillel, once you're expansive regarding Hotzah, so you're also going to be more expansive regarding, or more Mako regarding Muksa. That is now the way the Gemara proposes it, and so the Gemara seems to be very happy with Rav Papa's explanation. That the discrepancy between the Mishnah and Beitza and the Mishnah and Megillah is really the discrepancy between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel regarding the issue of Mitoch. Beis Shammai is very limiting in terms of what is allowed on Yom Tov vis-a-vis Hotzah and all the other malachas that are necessary for Ochel Nefesh. Beis Hillel is more expansive. And then we see from there that Beis Shammai is going to be very limiting by Muksa, and Beis Hillel is going to be slightly more expansive when it comes to Muksa on Yom Tov. The Gemara continues now. The Afra Savala Laha de Rava. And we know that Rav also is in agreement with Rav and Rav's conclusion. Meaning Rav is of the opinion that when you have a klisha malach de leheter, I can move it for Sarach Gufo and Sarach Mekamo and Mecham Letzel. And now the Gemara is going to share with us that Rav is also in line with that viewpoint. The Amar Rav Mar, Rav talks about a shovel, a spade, shelo yignov, zel tiltu shelo letzarech, v'aser. If I have a shovel, now a shovel of course is a klisha malach de leiser. And Rav's of the opinion that, let's say, you want it to bring it inside because you don't want it to be stolen, so this is equivalent to chama letzel. And he says you're not allowed to move it from the outside into the inside of the house if all you're interested in doing is just simply wanting to prevent it from being stolen. This falls under the category of tiltul shelo tzarech, and therefore it's going to be aser. And the Gemara just makes a simple inference. Taima shelo yignov. And so the concern over here is that it won't be stolen. Aval tzarech gufo, tzarech mekomo mutter. But if it's the question of tzarech gufo, tzarech mekomo would be mutter, and this goes right in line with the shita of Rava. Eni, the Gemara says, but wait one second, is this true? Baha Rav Kahana equal lebe Rav. We have an incident where Rav Kahana goes to the house of Rav Amar Isali, Shusa la Kahana, li Yasib Aleha. And now he instructs that a Shusa be brought for him, for Rav Kahana, so that he could sit down on it. Now what a Shusa is, Rashi over here describes it as a trap. If you take a look at the Bach, he describes it as a beam. Let's call it a beam right now. It'll just be nice and easy to visualize. So basically, Rav Kahana comes over, and Rav gives instructions for a beam to be brought over. So lav lameimah d'davishem lachto le'iser. So the Gemara assumes right now that we're talking about something that's a klisha malachto le'iser, and letzarech gufo and letzarech mekom alo. And the only reason why Rav gave instruction to bring it is because he needed the actual beam itself, which means that he only would have allowed it for tzarech gufo, not for tzarech mekom alo. Okay. So hachi amar luhu. So the Gemara says no, you misunderstood. Shkulu shusu mikame kahana. Now it could very well be that his instructions were as follows. In other words, he needed the space right now, and the beam was in the way. And his instructions were, move the beam away so that Rav Kahana has a place to sit. So the Gemara says, if that's true, if that's exactly what he said, so then, again, it fits in line with what we know. That Rav subscribes to the Shita of Rava. Now, I know historically Rava comes later. But in terms of Shitas, Rav subscribes to the Shita of Rava, and that when I have a klisha malach de leiser, I can move it l'tzarech gufo, and I can move it also l'tzarech mekomo as well. Ibai Sema, another possibility is hasa mecham l'tzel havei. Or maybe the issue is that the movement was mecham l'tzel. In other words, that the only way he wouldn't have moved it is only if it was from mecham l'tzel, which you're not allowed to do for a klisha malach de leiser. Gemara continues, Rav Mari Barachal Havali Hahi Beit Sudisa B'Shimsha. So Rav Mari Barachal had some sort of linen pillow that was out in the sun. Asala Kamidarava Amarle Maul Tautalinu. So, and he goes to Rav and he asks him a shayla, am I allowed to move it? Now, the reason why he wants to bring it inside is because it's out in the sun and it's going to get ruined if it stays out there in the sun. So he's moving it, in this case, both within the category and literally, mecham alisel, he's moving it from the sun to the inside. Now, we already know what Rav is going to say because at this point in the daf, we get it. Rav is of the position that eklisha machta leheter, so one is allowed to move it mecham alisel. What is Rav's response? Amalei shari. Okay, good. So it's exactly as we predicted. Rav says it's mutter. So isle achrina. So at this point in time, you already see that there's a reluctance on the part of this Mari Bar Rachel, where even though Rav told him it's okay, so Mari Bar Rachel was trying to be a little resistant to the psak. He says, you know, I have another pillow inside. So the Gemara says, chazal orchin. Rav says, okay, but I'm sure the guests are going to want to, are going to need it. So the Gemara says, so his response is, isle namel orchin. Nah, I have also for my guests as well. So Amrle Galita Idecha Decha Rabba Svirale. So he says, Rabba says, oh, I see what's going on over here. Meaning, you really hold like Rabba. And when we say Rabba again, you can take Rabba and you can also say Abaye. The riff in the Rosh Girsa is Abaye. Oh, so you really hold like Abaye. Meaning that when you have a Kli Shemalachto Leheter, you're not allowed to move in Mecham Lechel. That was Abaye's conclusion yesterday's daf. That was his conclusion in today's daf as well. So the Gemara says, oh, so I see what's going on over here. So really you subscribe to Abaye. So the Kulei Amishar, the Ditcha Aser. So for everyone else it's Mutter, meaning anyone else who asks me, I'm going to tell them that's Mutter. But for you it's Aser, because you subscribe to the Shita of Abaye. Of course, it's a little bit awkward over here. If he really does subscribe to the Shita of Abaye, so then what is he doing asking Rava? And presumably he knows what Rava is going to say. So the give and take over here is a little bit difficult to understand. But anyway, it certainly highlights the Shita of Rava. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Ashi, Amar Rav Machbir Shel Milsa. If you have brooms that are made up of wool, Motel L'Taltalam B'Shabbos, one is allowed to move them on Shabbos. Rashi over here says that a broom that's made up of wool is considered a Kli Shel Melachto Leheter. Rashi describes that basically what you're doing with it is that you're brushing the table with it. And so therefore there is no Melacha being done with it whatsoever. It's a Kli Shel Melachto Leheter. And so therefore one is allowed to move it on Shabbos. However, aval shel tamara, but if the broom is made out of twigs or branches, lo. One is not allowed to move it on Shabbos. Rashi says that the broom that's made out of twigs and branches, and that is the kli shel melachto le'iser. Because what you're going to end up doing with this broom is you're going to be leveling the floor. That's ashvui gumos. Now, this is something which is inevitable, meaning even though that's not your kavana, but still Rashi describes it, put this under the category of psik resha, and so therefore it is usser. It's a kli shel melachto le'iser. And therefore, you're not allowed to move it. Rabbi Lazar Omer, Afshal Tamar. Now, Rabbi Lazar says that one is allowed to move on Shabbos the broom made up of branches. Now, B'mayiskinan, the Gemara says, okay. So, the categories are very clear. We went through the categories. The Machbeda Shel Milsa, the broom made out of wool, is a Kli Shel Machto Leheter. And the Machbeda Shel Tamara is a Kli Shel Machto Leiser. So, the categories we got down. But why is he moving it? Elam L'Tzorch Gufa L'Tzorch Mekoma B'Halem Arad. Now, if you're moving it for the purposes of either Tzorch Gufo or Tzorch Mekoma, well, we already established that Rav follows the position of Rava. And Rava and Rav are both of the opinion that a Kli Shel Melachto Leiser, you are allowed to move both for Tzorch Gufo and Tzorch Mekoma. The Harav Ka Rava Sferle, that's exactly the Gemara's point. We know that Rav holds like Rava. Ela Mecham L'Tzel. So the Gemara says, well, then the prohibition is only moving it from Mecham L'Tzel. So the Gemara says, Baha Leimer Rav Lazar Af Shel Tomorrow. So the Gemara says, so then what is Rav Lazar Shita? Rav Lazar Shita is that also the tomorrow, meaning if I'm moving him from Cham L'Tzel, so a Kli Shel Melachto L'Iser, I know I'm not to move from Cham L'Tzel. So La'ola Mecham L'Tzel, Ema V'Chein Ama Rav Lazar. So the Gemara says, fine. So the way to understand, the way to bridge from the Shita of Rav to the Shita of Rav Lazar is V'Chein Ama Rav Lazar, meaning Rav Lazar is in agreement. That once we're talking about a Kli Shel Melachto Leiser, so then I could move it Tzorch Gufo, I could move it Tzorch Mekoma, but I cannot move it Mechama L'Tzel. Okay, so everything works out. Where do we stand after a lengthy Gemara and a lengthy discussion? So what we end up now is there are basically, in our discussion, in terms of Moksa, there are three basic categories of Moksa. There is a Kli Shel Melachto leheter. There's a kli shemalakto leiser. There's also a third category, which is a kli that is muksa machmas chisar and kis. But for the most part, we have been focusing in this daf with the first two categories: a kli shemalakto leheter, a kli shemalakto leiser. Where does it stand in terms of at what point you can move these items? So that's the machlokes between Rava and Abaye. And again, just to quickly organize the information, Rava is of the opinion that a kli shemalachto leheter, so you can move it according to Rava. You can move it tzarch gufo, tzarch mekamo, and mechamal itself. If it's a kli shemalachto leiser, according to Rava, I can only move it tzarch gufo, tzarch mekamo, but I cannot move it mechamal itself. By the way, that is the accepted halacha. On the other hand, the shita of Abaye is that a kli shemalachto leheter, I can move tzarch gufo, tzarch mekamo, I cannot move it mechamal itself. If it's a kli shemalachto leiser, I can only move it tzarch gufo, I cannot move it tzarch mekamo, and certainly cannot move it mechamal itself. And then, over the course of the majority of this daf, up until this point in time, the Gemara went back and forth in terms of understanding various mishnayos on the topic of muksa, understanding our very own Mishnah that we've been dealing with today, what are the definitions of the tzarech, shelo tzarech. Each Amora is going to put in his pshat based on his sheet of how he handles the various categories of muksa. Let's continue. We are in the Mishnah on Kuf Chav Dalet Amud Beis. Kol HaKelim HaNitalim B'Shab B'Shivrein Mitalim M'mahem. So when you have a keli that can be moved on Shabbos, the broken shards of this keli can also be moved as well. We will, in just a moment, as we start with the Gemara, clarify when exactly it broke. Uvavachi yuosim me'in malacha. Now the Mishnah says that there has to be a malacha can be performed with the shvarim, meaning with the broken pieces, a malacha must be able to be performed. Shiva areva lachasos bem espiachavis. So let's say, for example, you had a mixing bowl. And you had shards of the mixing bowl. As long as you can do something functional, as long as it has a utility, for example, it could be used to cover the barrel. Or let's say you had glass that broke, and those glass shards could still be used to cover the pitcher. Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Bavashi Osim Me'in Malachtan. Now Rabbi Yehuda says that the only way the shvarim are going to be able to be used on Shabbos is only if the utility they have continues to be the same utility it had before it was broken. So for example, Shiva Areva Lasok Lasokhan Mikvah. So let's say you had a bowl that broke, but the pieces of the broken bowl still have some sort of concave shape to them, and I could use it to basically make to put cereal in it. Shazuchis Lasuk Lasokhan Shaman. Or let's say I had a glass bottle, it broke, but the shards are still good in which it could still hold some oil. So only if the pieces have the same function as it did before it broke, then and only then does it not lose its muksa status. So in the Mishnah, you have a machlokas between the Tanakama and the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda as to whether or not the shvarim are going to maintain the status of a kli if they could be used either according to the Tanakhama for any purpose or according to Rabbi Yehuda only for its original purpose. Now, I'm Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Now, one thing that we did not discuss in the Mishnah but definitely needs clarification is when exactly did it break? When did the kli break? So, I'm Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Machlokish Nishmu Me'erev Shabbos. The debate in the Mishnah is only if it broke on Erev Shabbos. The Mar Savar Me'im Lacha. In Me'in Malacha Acheres Lo, where the Shita of Rav Yehuda is that it has to be from the original Malacha that it was done, but not any other Malacha, not any other purpose. Umar Sav Rafila Me'in Malacha Acheres. And on the other hand, the Tanakhama is of the opinion that as long as it serves any purpose, it would still be okay. Aval Nishbur B'Shabbos, but if it broke on Shabbos, Divrei Hakol Mutarin, everyone would be of the opinion that it would be Mutar Ho Muchanim Al Gabe Avihen Mutar. So, since going into Shabbos, it was not muksa, so therefore, even though it broke on Shabbos, it's still going to maintain its non-muksa status. This is what the Gemara is proposing, is the entire machlokus of the Mishnah, and that is that we're going to be more machmir if it broke before Shabbos rather than on Shabbos itself. So most of Rav Zutrai, when Rav Zutrai hears this, he says, wait one second, Masikim Bekelim, Be'in Masikim B'Shivrei Kelim. We have a Mishnah Beitza. The Mishnah Beitza says that one can use kelim on yantiv, meaning you have kelim made out of wood, You need fuel for the fire, so you could throw the kli into the fire and burn the kli. However, if you have a kli that broke on Yontif, you cannot use the shram, you cannot use the pieces. The reason why you can't use the pieces is because they are fall under the category of nolad, meaning these pieces were not here before Yontif. Before Yontif, this was a functional kli. It breaks on Yontif, and so therefore what you have now in front of you is nolad. Now, the Gemara makes this point very clear. Dinishbur Amos, when did they break? Elam of Dinishbur Meir of Yontov, Eitzim Ba'amaneno. Now, it can't be that the Kalim broke before Yontov, because if the Kalim broke before Yontov, do you know what you have going into Yontov? You have wood that you could burn for fuel. So, Alalah, B'Yontov, obviously this Mishnah is describing where it broke on Yontov. V'ketani Mesikim B'Kalim, Meim Mesikim B'Shivrei Kalim. And the Mishnah is very clear that if the Kli is intact, I can use it for burning, I could use it for the fireplace. But if it breaks on Yontif itself, so I cannot use the pieces because the pieces fall into the category of nolad. So Ela'it Mahachi Itmar. So the Gemara says, fine. So it's a really strong question. And the Gemara says, so we're going to have to just change our original assertion. Am Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Machlokish Nishbur B'Shabbos. The entire Machlokish is only when it broke on Shabbos. Mar Savar Muchan Hu, Mar Savar Nolad Hu. And there is a debate in the Mishnah in terms of whether or not we view this as Muchan, meaning it's not muksa, and the reason why is because going into Shabbos, it wasn't muksa, and therefore it maintains its non-muksa status even as it's broken. And the other position is no, that it's really nola. It falls into the category of nola, meaning it's a new entity now, as a broken shard. Aval me'erev Shabbos divrei kol mutar and hovu chanel melachim ba'od yom. But if it breaks on erev Shabbos, so according to everybody, it would be mutar, because since it broke on erev Shabbos, so therefore now, it, whatever purpose it may serve going into Shabbos is going to be that utility which gives it its non-muksa status. Tanichada, the Gemara now is going to deal with the discrepancy between three brises. Tanichada, Mesikim Bekelim, and Mesikim Meshivrei Kelim. The first brisa says that one can use on Yontif wood, but if it broke on Yontif, you cannot use the broken pieces of wood for your fuel. The second brisa says that I can use both the wood and the broken pieces of the kli to use for fuel. And Tanyidach, when we have a third brisa, third brisa says that I cannot use the kli for fuel for the fire, and I certainly can't use the broken kalim for fuel for the fire. So obviously over here, these three brises are not in agreement with one another, and there is no way to resolve these three brises. It's just simply reflecting three different opinions. HaRev Yehuda, HaRev Shimon, HaRev Nechemia. So they are three different opinions regarding muksa in general. Let's start off with the first brisa. We're backing up to the first of the three brises. The first brisa says, Masikim Mekelim, Masikim Meshevei Kelim. That's the sheet of Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda, who generally accepts a wider scope of muksa. So that means that the kli itself is not muksa because it had utility going into Yontif. So the kli can be used for fuel for the fire, but if it breaks, so now those broken shards are muksa. They weren't there before Shabbos. I'm sorry. I say Shabbos here, I mean Yontif, because we're talking about using it as fuel. So the broken pieces now have the status of nolad. And this is Shitas Rav Yehuda, who subscribes to muksa, and nolad is really a subcategory within muksa. The second brisa that says that you are allowed to use both the kalim and the Shivrei Kelim, that's the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, because Rabbi Shimon has an extraordinarily limited scope of muksa. The language the Gemara uses is Rabbi Shimon leislei muksa, and so therefore you could use the kelim, you could use the Shivrei Kelim as well for the fuel for Yontif. And finally, the third brisa that says ein masikin lo bekelim v'lo b'shivrei kelim, that is the expressed opinion of Reb Nechemia. Reb Nechemia, which we saw in our Mishnah, not our Mishnah, but on the Amud Aleph. Reb Nechemia says that the only thing that a keli can be used on Shabbos and on Yontif is only for its general purpose, only for its specific purpose. I cannot use a kli for any other purpose. It cannot repurpose a kli, according to Reb Nechemia. The kli, as it still whole and intact, was not meant as firewood, and so therefore, according to Reb Nechemia, you cannot use it as firewood. And certainly, if it breaks and now you have no lod, certainly Reb Nechemia will not allow you to use it for fuel for the fire. So these three brises are just simply reflecting the various viewpoints of the Amoraim. Am Rav Nachman Hani Livne Di Ishtar Mibinyana. Let's say you have bricks that were left over from construction site, meaning they didn't use all the bricks, they had some left over. Charlotte Tatalinu Dechazul Mizgai Elihu. So one is allowed to move them on Shabbos and Yontif, presumably over here, no difference between Shabbos and Yontif now, at this point in time. because they could be used for makeshift chairs. Sharginhu, however, if before Shabbos, let's say they were piled up, meaning that the contractor decided that I'm not using it for this project anymore, as I don't have any more need for any bricks, but I'll use it for another project, and it's clear that that's what he's thinking because he piled them up. So vadai aksinu. So at this point in time now they're muksa because clearly they are designated and set aside for future construction, and so therefore it's a klisha machal iser, and therefore you cannot move it. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel, Cheres Ketana Mutal Atalta B'Chatzer. Gemara's discussion over here is super interesting, as the Gemara now is going to at least entertain the idea that maybe Muksa will be a function of where it is situated. So if I have Cheres Ketana, if I have a small piece of earthenware, so I'm allowed to move it within the Chatzer. Ava B'Karmelis Lo, but not in the Karmelis. Rashi writes over here, Bechatzer, Rashi is the first wide line towards the bottom, meaning in the Chatzer, there are many other Kalim in the Chatzer. And so therefore, this piece of shard could be used as a cover for any of the other Kalim. And so therefore, it has Torah's Kli. It is considered a utensil. And so therefore, if it's found in the Chatzer, so then I could use it, but not in the Karmelis. And in the Karmelis, and Rashi points out over here, first of all, you're not allowed to carry more than 4 amos in a Karmelis. So let's say you're not planning on moving it 4 amos. Let's say you're planning on moving it within 4 amos. But now what we're learning together is that within the Shita of Nachman Amar Shmuel, there is a muksa consideration. Because since there aren't a lot of kelim in the Karmelis, the cheres is probably not going to be used. And therefore, it wasn't set aside for a usable item on the Shabbos. And therefore, it's going to be muksa. Rav Nachman didei. Now, Rav Nachman, that was Rav Nachman quoting Shmuel. Rav Nachman himself is of the opinion, Amar, I feel a bit Karmelis, that even if I find this piece of cheres in the Karmelis, so it has some sort of functional use. So Rashi says it can cover up some spit. But if I find the cheres in the Rishos HaRabim, lo, you cannot move it. Again, we're not talking about beyond 4 amos, that would be Nisa D'Oraisa. We're talking about even within 4 amos, there is still a muksa consideration because there really is no intended purpose of usage out in the Rishos HaRabim, and therefore it's going to be muksa. So, within the Shitas of Rav Nachman and Rav Shmuel, so, a really interesting position that muksa is going to be also dependent, it's also going to be a function of where it was located going into Shabbos. And this is all in distinction to Rava. Rava Amar Afilu Rishos HaRabim. Rava is of the opinion that even if I found in the Rishos HaRabim Ba'azor Rava Latami, Rava is consistent. The Rava Hava Ka'azol. Be'rikta de Mechuzah. Rava was going through the thoroughfare of Mechuzah, meaning Rishos HaRabim, at Vata Misane Tina. And what happened is that his shoes got good and muddy. Asa Shame, along comes his attendant. Shakal Chaspa, he took a shard, presumably in the Rishos HaRabim. V'chamechaper lay. And he used it to wipe down the shoes of his master. And so, the attendant, presumably is Jewish, presumably a Shomer Shabbos, and now he's taking a shard that was found in the Rishos HaRabim, and he's using it to wipe the shoes of Rava. Now, this shard, does it have the status of Muksa? Does not have the status of Muksa. So if you were to ask Rav Nachman, or even if you were to ask Shmuel, so they would say that because it was found in the Rishos HaRabim, it therefore is going to have Muksa status. But as we learn together, Rava does not feel that it has Muksa status. Meaning, once it is established that it is not a muksa item, so then it does not matter where it is to be found, it is not going to be a muksa item. So, Ramulei Rabbanan Kala. So, the rabbis who saw all this happening, so they raised their voice, meaning that's not right. Meaning, they thought that the shard that was found in the Rishos HaRabim has a muksa status, and they felt that Rava and his attendant were violating the Yisurma muksa. So Amr, so Rava says now to the Chachamim, lo mistayed lo gemirer, but migmar nami migmare, it's bad enough you guys don't learn. And now you're going to take your uneducated positions and you're going to try to teach other people your uneducated positions. Ila b'chatzar have milo have chazil lekesuei be'mana, hachanami chazil lididi. So he says, if this shard was to be found in the chatzar, you would agree with me that it is not a muksa item. It could be used to cover a jar or another container. So it doesn't matter where you find it. You find it in the Chatzar, you find it in the Karmelis, you find it even in the Rishos HaRabim, it's not going to be Muksa. This is Rabba being consistent, where once an item is designated as a non-Muksa item, so then it does not matter where the item is found, it is always going to have a non-Muksa status. At this point in time, we'll conclude. We'll stop for now. We'll pick it up next time with the words Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Let us quickly summarize our daf. first order of business today was to take those Mishnayos, which were very machmir in terms of Moksa, and try to figure out when historically they were laid forth. So in yesterday's daf, we had the shittas of Rabbi Hanina and Rabbi Lazar, who says that these Mishnayos are old, antiquated Mishnayos that go back to the time that Moksa was originally set forth by Nehemiah Hanavi. And then we opened up today with the shita of Rabbi that says no, that these Mishnayos are up to date in terms of Moksa. And it happens to be that these particular Mishnayos are machmir for various reasons, and we went through each of these Mishnayos, and we saw why we're machmir on these particular Mishnayos. Then we went through a Mishnah, Kol HaKelim Nitalim Tzarech V'Shalol Tzarech. The Mishnah tells us that Kelim can be moved for both Tzarech and Shalol Tzarech. Reb Nechemiah is going to be machmir. What is the Shita of the Tanna Kamma? What's the response of Reb Nechemiah? So on that, we had two basic approaches in today's daf. We had the Shita of Rabbah, and the Shita of Rabbah is in alignment with Abaye, which is that basically we're going to be taking a more machmir approach towards Moksa, something which is a klisha malachto leheter, so you can move the tzarech gufo, tzarech mekamo, but a klisha malachto leiser, you can only move the tzarech gufo, but you cannot move the tzarech mekamo. And then, and that's the Tanna Kamma, Reb Nechemiah disagrees, and Masha Enkin, the Shita of Rava, is that both a klisha malachto leiser and a klisha malachto leheter, you can move tzarech gufo, tzarech mekamo. The difference between them is that a klisha malachto leheter, you can move mechamo letzel, a klisha malachto leiser, you cannot move mechamo letzel. And on that, Reb Nechemiah is going to be machmer. And the Gemara spent a good amount of time trying to see which of these pshatim are going to be more tenable, both in our Mishnah and in other Mishnayos as well. As we move to the bottom of Kuch Chavdal and Amud Aleph, we saw that there is a possibility that we are going to deem something on Yom Tov to be Muksa. Since it's Muksa on Shabbos, it's also going to be Muksa on Yom Tov as well. And basically the question that we dealt with on the bottom of the Amud Aleph is there going to be an equivalency of Muksa when it comes to Shabbos and Yontif? And if something's Muksa on Shabbos, is that by definition going to make it Muksa on Yontif as well? And this we saw is a machlokus between the Mishnayos, and the Amoraim try to explain that this machlokus between the Mishnayos is a machlokus of, and we had two attempts at trying to explain, it's a machlokus of what? The Gemara's conclusion, this is Rav Papa's conclusion, is that it's a machlokus between Shammai and Beis Hillel. The Mishnah in Beis Hillel introduces us to the concept of Mitoch. Beis Hillel subscribes to the concept of Mitoch. Beis Shammai does not subscribe to the concept of Mitoch. And the Gemara says that that really is also going to be reflective of these two Mishnayos. And bonus, what we got from there as well, is that the Gemara links together the issue of Muksa and the issue of Hotzah. The Gemara says that part of the Gzera of Muksa is that it would lead to Hotzah, which... It's a clear statement in the Gemara that we're going to get in terms of why the Chachamim were Gozer Muksa. There are other reasons as well. We didn't really speak it out. Perhaps on a future daf we'll speak out more of the reasons why the Chachamim prohibited Muksa. The Gemara notes that the Shita of Rav is in a line with that of Rava. Now Rava obviously came before Rava, but still, in terms of Shitos, Rav and Rava are to be aligned with one another. Rav's position is the more lenient position that you can move a klisha malachta leheter, tzarech gufo, tzarech mekamo, and mechama letzel. Gemara had a story where another Amara comes over to Rav, asks him the question, Rav gave him the answer, but clearly he was more in line with Abaye as opposed to Rav. The next mission that we did is that not only can I move a kli, but I can also move shivrei kelim as well, as long as they retain function. Now, what kind of function? So that was a machlokus in the Mishnah between the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Yehuda. According to the Tanna Kamma, any function. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, only its original function. And the Mishnah gave examples. When exactly did the Kli break? So the Gemara proposed at first that it broke on Shabbos. But the Gemara says, but that's extraordinarily unlikely. Because if it broke on Shabbos, so then we have the issue of Muksa, of Nola. So then what we're suggesting now is that it broke before Shabbos. The Gemara, the Gemara ends up concluding that the Gemara ends up concluding that what I just said was the proposal. The Gemara ends up concluding that according to Rabbi Yehuda Shmuel, the machlokas of our Mishnah is when it breaks on Shabbos. The question is whether or not it's muchan or nola. But if it breaks before Shabbos, according to everybody, it would be mutter as long as it still has some sort of functional use. We talked about wood being burned on Yontif. The kli is intact. The kli broke. So am I allowed to burn the kli and the broken pieces? Three different brisos reflecting the three different viewpoints of Muksa. The most machmer position is Rabbi Nechemiah. The most makel position is Rabbi Shimon. The middle position is Rabbi Yehuda. And the last thing that we covered over the course of this daf is the question of whether or not something can be, quote-unquote, more muksa based on where it was located on the onset of Shabbos. There are Amorayim, Shmuel, Rav Nachman, who are of the opinion that if the item is not found in the chatzer, but rather it's found in a more open and public area, so then it could be more muksa. Gradations between the positions of Shmuel and Rav Nachman, but nevertheless, that's the basic idea. Rav, on the other hand, fundamentally disagrees. He says once an item is deemed a non-muksa item, it's not going to matter where you find the item, whether you find it in the Rishos Yachid, or in the Karmelis, or in the Rishos Rabin. If it's not muksa, it will not be muksa found in any one of those locations.